Welcome to Beat Infertility, a podcast where we get real about infertility, empower you to take back control, and provide you with hope for the future. Ready? Here's your host, fellow infertility warrior, Heather Hooman.
Welcome to episode 224. Today you'll hear the success story of a woman named Jennifer. She is a 40-year-old virtual consultant who enjoys going to the beach, doing crossword puzzles, and spending time with her family. A few short months after marrying her husband, Jennifer became pregnant, but it was ectopic. After two more ectopic pregnancies and an early miscarriage, both of her tubes were surgically removed. They consulted three fertility clinics and then moved forward with IVF at one of them. Their retrieval resulted in 8 embryos, and they transferred 2 of them. This gave them their son. Ready for another child 2 years later, they returned to the clinic and transferred 1 embryo. It implanted, but unfortunately, she miscarried at around 8 weeks. Let's listen to how Jennifer transferred 2 more embryos about 2 years later and became pregnant with her daughter. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's so good to be here.
Why don't we start by hearing a little bit about you? How old are you? What do you do for a living? And what do you do for fun?
Well, I am 40 years old. I just turned 40 in September. I'm a virtual consultant, virtual assistant. So I have clients in kind of various categories where I do different types of work for them, just kind of depending on what they need and what they're looking for. And so I've had a kind of a wide variety of clients and things, and it's ever changing as the world is changing. We keep kind of adjusting and changing to what people need. And so I've been doing that for a couple of years now, and it's been really, really great with kids to be able to have a business where I can, you know, find clients and, you know, do everything pretty much at home remotely through the internet. So, and then what do I do for fun? Well, I have an 11-month-old baby, so I feel like what we do for fun is pretty much whatever she's into right now. I have a 6-year-old and an 11-month-old. So our fun is kind of consists of what kids find fun. We get to a stage where things are easier and we can maneuver ourselves throughout the world. I used to play a lot of volleyball and tennis and golf, so I still enjoy those things. I just don't do them quite as often. But I also could cook every day. I'm a big fan of cooking. And if I had a secret job or something I could do, if I had all the talent in the world, I would be, you know, a chef or some kind of something in the cooking world.
Think about your life before infertility. Back then, how would you describe yourself as a person?
I was really outgoing, and I was in sales for 16 years. So I had a variety of jobs that are all kind of with meeting with people every day and getting out and about. And I had a pretty large social network here in Kansas City. I was, you know, volunteering 4 different places and I was just kind of a nonstop gal, going all the time and just having a lot of fun, enjoying this city that we live in that has a lot of kind of like a small town and a big city in the same breath. So yeah, I would just consider myself really a busy gal looking for success in my business life and marriage and children.
Tell me about the first time you met your husband.
Well, it was, I think we're looking at maybe 12 years ago, I think. We have to do the math. I actually met him when I was dating someone else. I was at the home opener game here in Kansas City. Everyone's a big Royals fan. So I happen to not really have been a big Royals fan, but my couple of friends and I went out to a happy hour, and we were sitting there and realized that there was almost no other women in the whole place. It was just us 3 and a whole bunch of men. And then we realized it was the home opener for the Royals baseball season. So we just found ourselves kind of in a funny situation. But it was there that he's a real tall guy. And I saw him across the room and just kind of he caught my eye. And he ended up coming to our table and chatting us up. And it turns out we grew up about 30 minutes from each other. Our hometowns were really close. So we just kind of talked to them, and a couple of weeks later, that boyfriend of mine and I broke up, and so we reconnected again, dated for a little, like a couple of weeks, ended up coming back to the old boyfriend, staying with him for 9 months, and then as soon as we broke up for real that time, I reached out to him, and we pretty much were inseparable from that day on, so it was a good thing we met.
Today, how would you describe you and your husband as a couple?
We both actually, we started a little bit later in life. He's 4 years older than I am. So we got going. I was 30 when we got married. And so we were always an active couple prior to that. So I knew him from about 27 on. And so when we dated, we did lots of, you know, outdoorsy things. We had kayaks. We were played tennis and golf together. And then, you know, got married 3 years later. And we're still, we both work and we love our kids and we both have big families. And so we're really family oriented. He's actually a twin, a fraternal twin. And then I have a couple siblings and he has three siblings. So we're big into, you know, seeing our family as often as we can. And we love to do stuff with our kids together. And, you know, we've kind of always geared that way. Even when we were dating, we did a lot of things with our family and our nieces and nephews. So we've just always been kind of actively participating. And now we have a family of four. And so we're trying to have as much fun as we can. And both of us, he's actually an artist as well. He's in sales and then he's an artist. So he and I are both kind of looking for how we can evolve our practice to both be remote and then maybe change our lifestyle a little bit. I mean, there's always a dream of maybe living on an island or something like that, but we're kind of trying to center our life around our family, but also kind of our interests and making sure we're always having fun and getting out in the world and exploring and trying some new adventures.
Was there a specific moment in your life when you first knew you wanted to be a mom?
Yes. I have an older sister. She's 10 years older than I am. So when I was 16, she got married. And so I was her maid of honor. And I remember it was 2 years after that, she started having children. She had four boys just right in a row. So starting my senior year of high school and then my freshman or sophomore year of college, and then two more after that. And so every time she had a baby, I just thought, oh my gosh, I want a baby too. And being an aunt, everyone knows it's all the fun, none of the stress. So I prided myself on being the fun Aunt Gigi is what they called me. That was just such a source of joy for me, is to be able to play with them. I was at her house pretty much every day, just seeing the kids and hanging out with her. And she's an exceptional mom. She's kind of the mom I would want to be if I were like a perfect mom. She's very creative and she's very patient. And so every time, you know, she had another baby, I just knew I wanted to be a mother just like her.
And how did that longing to be a mom impact other decisions in your life?
The major one is this virtual assistant. I think I'd always wanted to have control of my schedule so that first of all, it's just nice to be able to have control of your schedule. But that was a big driver for me into starting this business of mine, was to be able to incorporate family time as the major driver of my time, because I want to be able to be in the classroom with my kids and be able to walk to school and walk home from school. And since I was 30, has been in my mind to either start a business or do something to where I could be a mom like my mother was. My mother worked a couple times in my life, but it was mostly part-time. And so she was always home. She was always available. She got to come to everything. My dad traveled a lot, but he'd be there for most games and things like that. But I mostly remember just my mom always being there. And I always wanted to be that kind of a mother for my kids, if possible. So probably since I was 30 or even 29-ish, that's been in the back of my mind, that I wanted my career to be able to be flexible with my family.
Let's dive into the journey to build your family. Take us through your whole infertility timeline, starting at the beginning.
Well, we were married in July of 2010, and both of us were big family people and definitely knew we wanted a family. So we started right away trying to get pregnant. And in October, which was just a couple months in, we were pregnant and so excited and felt so blessed. And about 8 weeks or so into it, we discovered that we couldn't hear a heartbeat. And so they went in and looked, and it was actually what's called an ectopic pregnancy. You know, we didn't know anything about ectopic pregnancy, but we learned that it's caught in the fallopian tube and unable to make its way to the uterus. So we had successfully become pregnant as far as the fertilized egg, but it just couldn't make its way to the uterus. So we had found a really amazing doctor, and we were excited that we got pregnant so quickly. So, you know, as soon as we were cleared to try again, we got right back to it. And then come April, so that's, you know, July, October, and now April of 2011, we got pregnant again. We were ecstatic. And then I think it was 8 or 9 weeks, almost exactly a similar timeline, we discovered that, again, that we couldn't find the heartbeat. We didn't ever get to hear it. And that turns out it was another ectopic pregnancy. And it turns out that both times it was on the right side. So the right fallopian tube seemed to be causing us problems. But the hope there was that it's something or a problem with the right side fallopian tube, but the left side could still be good. So we had a little more hope. We were able to get pregnant. Maybe one side was bad, but the other side was good. My mother actually had me with only one tube. Her other tube had exploded during a pregnancy. So this was a little scary to learn during this journey that my mother had had the same trouble. But it was, you know, reassuring to know that she had me after something like that on one fallopian tube. So we were kind of still having good thoughts and hope. So that was April. Again, we kind of waited the process for it to kind of dispel on its own. And then as soon as we were cleared to try again, we did. And then October, that would have been just another, you know, 6 months or so later, October of 2011, we got pregnant again. We were very excited, but this one, I think it was, you know, anyone in their infertility journey becomes really aware of pregnancy really early. So I was watching it like a hawk. I had taken a test. I mean, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks in, which is really, really early for a lot of people. I found out really early. And then this one happened to be, my doctor, I don't think they ever really discovered what happened to it. It was considered an early miscarriage. It was not an ectopic, but an early miscarriage this time. But it was only, I think, the 6 week mark, I mean, which is super duper early. Some people don't even really know they're pregnant at the 6 week mark. But again, we were going to try and keep our hopes up, the fact that we continue to get pregnant and that's not our problem. And that this time, again, the left fallopian tube seemed to be okay. So the plan and the game plan was going to be, why don't we figure out which side you're ovulating on and then only try to get pregnant in the, you know, because it alternates every month, on the month where you're ovulating on your left side. So that was the game plan. We felt good about it. So that was October 2011. And then, I mean, just 2 months later, 3 months later, January of 2012, we were pregnant again. I mean, we're thinking the fourth time's got to be the charm. This is the left side. this has to be it. And it came that it was a left side ectopic pregnancy. So, I mean, we were crushed. I was crushed. I thought, everyone feels this way. You know, I'm put together wrong. How could I possibly not? My husband obviously can do his side of things. And now I cannot seem to make it happen for my side of things. So that was January of 2012. And at that point, I think it was at this pregnancy or the pregnancy prior, they did I can't think of what the test is called, but where they put dye in your, I think it's a sonogram, and they do dye in your uterus to check to see if there's any issues with your uterus. And so in doing this testing, it found out that my uterus was actually in perfect shape. So that was the one glimmer of hope, was that we can get pregnant. We get pregnant often and the uterus seems to be working well. So the next plan was to do IVF, because that's where they take the fertilized egg and put it directly into the lining of the uterus. And it seemed, based on what, you know, we had seen from all of this experience, we're good at getting pregnant. The uterus looks great. This should be our avenue. I never had to take any kind of hormones or drugs or anything prior to that. So we were all for it if we needed to do that. So over the course of from February 2012 to about June of 2013, we visited 3 different IVF doctors, and we singled in on one. And kind of the funny side story is that my brother-in-law, my husband's sister's husband, turns out that he was going to be the lab director at KU here in Kansas City, KU's Medical Center, and the lab director for their infertility group. And so it was like the neatest stroke of something that he was going to be the person pretty much helping us to get pregnant. So it was this really amazing piece. So we got signed on right away, knowing that our family was going to be right along with us. It was, I think, June of 2013. They did the egg retrieval. I don't know anyone who doesn't think that it's a horrible process. They, you know, you get as much hormone, testosterone hormones as you can take. So you're just sort of crazy. And then your fallopian or your ovaries are just huge while they're trying to create as many eggs as possible. So it was kind of a rough process, but I think we ended up with, in the end, we started with 13, and by the end of the process, there were 8 fertilized eggs that looked good, that they felt good about. So it was this another kind of glimmer of hope, is that we can at least have 8 opportunities to try and have a baby. So we went, as soon as we were ready, I mean, just that very next month, I think it was July, they inserted 2 eggs. So we were kind of thinking we may have twins on our hands or more, you never know. And I think however many months in, you find out there was only one in there. The second egg, it never grew and never looked like it was going to be fortified egg. So we had one solid, very strong on our first chance, our first try at IVF. So it came to be a baby. So we had February 2014, we had our first child. It was a boy and he was healthy. He was actually 3 weeks and 2 days early, but absolutely no problems. We didn't have to stay in the hospital for any amount of time. So I basically just got to be pregnant for less amount of time, which was fine by me at that moment. And then, so we had a successful IVF. We still had 6 eggs that we froze. And so 2 years later, I think it was 2016, April-ish of 2016, we did a second attempt. And this time, because we'd had great success, we thought, oh, we'll just do 1 egg this time. And not, you know, already having one child, if you put 2 in, you kind of think the possibility for twins is greater, obviously. So we put 1 egg in. But what was different this time around is I was in a really stressful job. And so we probably should have taken that into consideration. I was sort of working around the clock and I was under a lot of stress. And so this second round of IVF was not as enjoyable. I was stressed all the time. I was trying not to be, which I think sometimes makes it worse. And so we did not end up with a pregnancy in this one. It was a very early miscarriage. It obviously got in the lining and sort of looked like it might be a viable pregnancy for a couple of weeks, but then we never got to hear the heartbeat. And so it was just not successful. And it was just really sad, just after all those pregnancies prior. And then this one, thinking, you know, we've got this beat now, we know how to do it. It was a pretty big letdown and really sad. And it just was kind of a very stressful time in our life. So we tried again. And so this time, you know, I started when I was 30 and we are now 39 when I went in for this, or was I 38? Either way, it's up there in the age for pregnancy attempts. So this was, I'm not sure what month, July again of 2018, not that long ago. So we did IVF for the third time and we knew better of it. So we put 2 eggs in because we want to play the odds in our favor. So we put in 2 eggs knowing full well we may end up with twins. And again, this was much, much different. I had started my virtual assistant business. And so this was just a year after that process. So I just felt a lot better. I wasn't under as much stress. I was in just a much better place mentally. And so we got pregnant again. And so this time it was a girl. But I don't know if you guys are familiar with the kind of stress levels. First of all, I think a girl just brings in more hormones than others. But all the while, I have to also be on the IVF drugs. And those hormones are already at some seriously high levels. So this pregnancy was a little more difficult and a lot of hormones, a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions, kind of older body. It was a lot harder, but it was certainly worth it. So we had our little girl here in the last April of 2019. And so we are all done. There was a lot of attempts to get, whenever I have to fill out those medical paperwork, so I say I've actually been pregnant 7 times with the result of 2 children. So it's a long kind of bumpy path, but it ended up, you know, with 2 beautiful kids and everything more than I could have ever hoped for.
You consulted several IVF clinics before choosing the one you did, correct?
Yes, 3.
Tell me about those other consultations.
We were referred to 2 of them. And the first one we met, I loved him. I thought he was, the head doctor, I guess, is who we met with. And I thought he was fantastic. He was very smart. He was kind of serious, which sometimes you need someone to be a little less serious. But in this instance, I was perfectly fine with having a very serious person. There wasn't much humor or lightheartedness in our meetings, but I felt really good about that. I really wanted someone to take this obviously very seriously. So we were kind of leaning towards this first doctor. And then we went to a second one and I had been told such great things. So we went into this second meeting with thinking, oh, this is going to be even better than the first. And I was completely taken aback. There was a lot of joking and lightheartedness at the meeting. And I thought it was kind of a strange way to handle an IVF. I've got, you know, my emotions are sort of all over the place and pretty scattered. And I'm kind of at the point where I cry at the thought of having kids. So to have someone kind of not take that seriously, I was pretty upset about it. And this was the one that we were referred to the most by the most people. And so I thought, this is really strange. So I was really unhappy about that. And then but we had had one good experience. So I was feeling really solid about that. But then within weeks of us making our decision, our brother-in-law became the lab director at a third place that we hadn't interviewed with, but we definitely went and had a meeting with them and felt very, very good. I absolutely adored the doctor, everyone we met, and of course, feeling very confident that my brother-in-law was going to do an exceptional job. We've known him for years, obviously, and feel very strongly about his work ethic and how good he is at what he does. So we felt like that was a blessing straight from God, just to send us that opportunity to get to work with someone we know and love. So we felt really, really well taken care of in that situation. So
was it weird to have your brother-in-law doing these treatments for you?
Yes, it was. Well, no, it anything and everything pretty much leading up to it, we met with the doctor and she was amazing. I wanted to be her best friend. She made you feel like you were her friend or her sister coming in for the meeting. And she knew we were family. So I knew that she was probably being extra kind. My heart just blossomed every time I went into the doctor's office for any meetings with her. So our experience was fantastic. There's one piece at the end when they do the inserting and the retrieval, I guess, was part of that. And then when they insert the eggs, which we have done with the same with my brother-in-law three different times, he obviously has to be there. So it's an odd experience from my side of the table, but from his, it's not. That's obviously what he does. He is extremely good at his job. He does not think it's strange at all. My husband, being, you know, they've known each other for 20 years. And so one of our other brother-in-laws, it was kind of a joke. He said, do you kind of want to, after we had success, he said, do you kind of want to shake his hand and punch him in the face at the same time? because it's such a strange thing. I mean, he's there kind of at my most volatile moments. Or not volatile, I guess vulnerable. Just being, you know, the person who's kind of present with the doctor when they're putting the eggs into my uterus. It was a unique situation, but it was wonderful.
How did you and your husband feel the day you found out you had to have your tubes removed?
For so long, for I think a year, almost a year and a half, we had held out so much hope that because otherwise I think we didn't feel like we had any other recourse. We didn't know much about IVF, but we thought our hope was hanging by my left ovary or my left fallopian tube. We were hanging all of our hope on the left fallopian tube, knowing that my mother had had me on one tube and knowing that we hadn't had any ectopics on that side. It appeared that one side was bad. And so we were holding out the hope that one side was good. And to learn that that fourth pregnancy was on the left side, we're pretty devastated. I just thought, I mean, all women who go through this, I think they think, what is wrong with my body? Why can't my body do this? And what did I do to make it not work well? And the other caveat to it was, you know, he very quickly sent us, we set up and scheduled the surgery to have my one, at least one. He said, we're going to look at both, but we know for sure we need to remove the right one because it's dangerous. We know how bad it is, but there's a chance that maybe the left one could be, I think they can even clean it out or there is an option to save it. So I go completely under and my husband is there. And the plan going into that surgery was to have the right side removed. There's a chance we'll remove the left, but it's a small chance. We don't know for sure that will happen. And the likelihood or the hope is that we'll maybe just be able to, I think, clean it out was the way they phrased it. So I go under thinking that there's hope. And I like to think positively and think at the best possible scenario. And I awoke in the surgery recovery room with a stranger, a nurse, no husband. He wasn't in the recovery yet. And to be told that I had both tubes removed, and I was devastated, and I had no one there with me. And I remember just thinking, it's over. All this and it's over. It's going to make me cry again. You don't know what hope to hold on to, because we weren't as familiar with IVF. And anytime you hear about IVF, it sounds like a humongous undertaking. It doesn't seem like it's an easy fix, or it's something that, you know, it just sounds like it's going to be hugely expensive. It's highly risky, and it's not necessarily the odds aren't in your favor. So knowing that, very little what I knew about IVF, I just thought, it's over. I should have started earlier. I should have this, that, and the other. My husband got to the room, when I got to my hospital room, he felt terrible because he had to make that choice while I was under. So he had to give the okay, knowing that that was the plan. I just didn't get to say okay. He had to say it. So it was a really odd choice for him to make, because they had to make the choice on the spot while I was there. And so I woke up to no fallopian tubes, and he had to be the one to say, go ahead. And so it was really weird.
Did you know about your mom having only one tube prior to your first ectopic? And if so, did you think that that even might be an issue?
I did not know. I mean, if she had ever told me, I had no recollection of it. I'm pretty certain we probably talked about it after the first ectopic. I feel like it happened later in my pregnancy journey here when she told me that, because it hit me that that's a pretty big deal. That because she had, my brother and I are 3 years apart. And so between us, she had her fallopian tube explode, or however they say that. Explode sounds a little dramatic, but in the hospital. And she very close could have died because she was losing a lot of blood. And I mean, my dad had to run out in the hallway and force a doctor to come in there and address it, because it had happened while it ruptured while they were waiting for someone to come get them. And she was in a huge amount of pain. And so it was a really dramatic, kind of terrible story. She could have died. And then, you know, within another year, maybe, I think she was pregnant with me. And then at my birth, I almost died of something called encephalitis. And so this was like, she had lots and lots and lots of trauma. Then, so we really kind of dove into all of that while going through my story. And so it was comforting because she has three children. And so she was able to have three children with all of the things that she went through. But yeah, it definitely came out as we went through my process, all the things that happened to her. And of course, she was 30 years prior. So the medical wasn't as safe of a time to try and have those types of pregnancies.
Tell me about the lowest point during your journey and how you regained the strength to keep going.
Gosh, it's hard to, I mean, I am one of those people that just sort of sees the best possible scenario. And so I got, every time I was pregnant, I got so excited. And so every time it was a let, and then, you know, one of the times it wasn't the biggest letdown, but I never got to hear the heartbeat except for once. And in those first four pregnancies, and it was in the tube that we heard, I mean, we could see it, and we could hear just a faint heartbeat, but it was like the baby was dying in there. I mean, it was super sad, but I had never heard the heartbeat, and that was my first time. And I just thought, I'm hearing it, but I don't get to ever. I mean, it was just, that was a big moment, because that, you know, when you're pregnant the way I was, hearing a heartbeat is something you keep waiting to hear, because you keep getting to the 8 or 9 week point, and that's when you should hear it. And I never, ever got to that point, except for, I'm not even sure, I think it was the fourth pregnancy where we finally heard just a little heartbeat, but it was in the tube, which was, you know, I don't even know how that happened. But so that was a pretty big letdown. And then for them to tell me right after that experience, we were going to have to at least remove one tube. They scheduled that surgery. I mean, that was probably the lowest point. I didn't have a whole lot of hope. We hadn't gone on any IVF appointments. We didn't really know, you know, all we know for sure is that IVF is super expensive. So then you think, how in the world are we going to come up with the money to be able, and I'm approaching an age where this becomes even harder. At the point in which I had to have one, and then kind of after they told me we had two fallopian tubes removed, that was pretty much kind of rock bottom for me, because it just seemed like we have tried and tried and tried and kept a good positive attitude and kept going and kept trying and just keep getting knocked down. And then to like have the tubes removed completely is just pretty devastating.
And how did you move forward from that?
We just wanted kids. I knew I wanted kids. Actually, my brother-in-law, the one who ended up being the lab director, he obviously is, this is his area of expertise. This is what he's working towards for his PhD. And I mean, he was a big point of reference for us. He helped us, gave us the referral to the doctor that we absolutely loved, because that was obviously someone he knew of. He gave us some new hope, some new glimmer of hope to know that at least what we had learned, the uterus, as far as they could see, looked really, really, she called it beautiful. And I remember leaving that appointment saying, that sounds good. Do you think they wouldn't use that word if it wasn't, you wouldn't say beautiful unless you really meant it was really good. You'd say it looks good. Everything looks fine. You know? And so I thought that's something. I feel like because she called it beautiful, the lab tech who had done the test said, it's really beautiful. So I felt good. And then he was the one who helped us understand what IVF was. And so that's how we picked ourselves up, is having someone we know and trusted to basically say, hey, this is what I do for a living. And it's a possibility. It's obviously got some downsides and some risk, but there is a chance. There is a way. That's how we picked ourselves up and went for it again, because I knew I wanted children. I think in the end, I wouldn't have cared how they got to me, but I wasn't done trying. I knew I was not done trying. So this gave us an opportunity to at least a way to see it through.
And what about a positive moment from your journey?
The first IVF, it was not fun, but it was knowing that Matthew is his name, Dr. Gearing. He was the brother-in-law. And so knowing that he was kind of right along there with us and that we had hope, that whole first experience of retrieval, getting 13 eggs and then down to 8 that they were really happy with, and then immediately saying, hey, we're going to go right into implementing 2 of those eggs, that whole time, I mean, that should have been a really kind of crazy time, but we were just riding on this excitement that there's an opportunity and an option for us. So it really wasn't that bad as far as stress goes and as far as pain and kind of your emotions are all over the place because of the hormones. It really wasn't. I was pretty level that whole time because we had this amazing hope that it would work. And so that whole experience, I think the whole process takes about 2 months to retrieve and then to implant those eggs. We were like kind of riding on, I don't even know what, walking on sunshine, because we were just so excited to see the possibility was strong for us. So, and I would think I was still 35 at the time. So I wasn't, you know, I was still of a good age. I had a great uterus and we had a lot of fun that time. We felt like we had all the odds in our favor.
Hey, Infertility Warrior, it's Heather. This episode of Beat Infertility is brought to you by me. Regular listeners of the show know that I struggled during my infertility journey with everything from finding the right clinic to advocating for a protocol customized to my body to allowing infertility to consume my entire existence and everything in between. In other words, I've been where you are. Now that I'm on the other side and have interviewed hundreds of other warriors and fertility experts, I've discovered the fastest way to realize your dream of becoming a parent is to get educated, regain hope, build resiliency, learn self-advocacy skills, and partner with someone who's been there. Whether you're an infertility newbie or a seasoned veteran, it would be my honor and privilege to provide, as one client put it, unwavering support with fully engulfing and genuine empathy. If you'd like to learn more or schedule a free 30-minute call to discuss how I can support you during your infertility journey, go to beatinfertility.co/hope. Now, back to the show. Tell me about the moment when you first learned you were going to be a mom.
It's different because I was with the IVF doctors this time, not my gynecologist that I had used, you know, all those other times. I loved him dearly, but this was different because I was with my brother-in-law and this doctor, this IVF doctor that I loved. And so I'm kind of glad I had a different set of people because it gave me the opportunity to be excited without holding back. Because every time when you have one failed pregnancy, any other pregnancy after that, you're going to have reservations, you're going to have fear, you're going to have all of that. And because I had a different cast of people around me, I felt like it was okay to have hope because I naturally want to, but I basically had told myself, you can't have hope. You can't have hope. You can't have hope all those other times because you don't want to get let down again because you continue to get let down. And it, because there's different people around me, I felt like I could be excited because they say I can. And it was amazing to learn. And then you stay with them for, I think, the first 3 appointments. I don't even think you go to your regular doctor until maybe 12 weeks. You're released from the IVF doctors. So you get to go see them 3 times. And the one good thing about doing an IVF process is that you are looked after and cared for in a way. You know, most times you don't get to go see an ultrasound, but maybe once or twice the entire pregnancy. When you do IVF, you get to go every week and see your baby every week. You see them when they look like a bumblebee. You see them when they look like a peanut. You see them when they look like, you know, you get extra care. And so this process with them was just, because it was successful, it was so much fun. And it just left me feeling like I finally got the experience that I have wanted for so long.
Tell me how you and your husband balanced work and fertility treatments.
I have always been in sales. So for me, I had a really large amount of flexibility as far as like my day. I didn't sit at a desk from 8 to noon and then lunch noon to 1. I mean, I could go to these appointments pretty freely and just move my appointments or my lunches or whatever needed to be done. I was able to be pretty flexible with it. So I mean, this came first for me, obviously, because of all the experience I'd had. You know, this was going to come first, especially because you're investing a huge amount of money. Also, this is my first job, is to be able to check on this human and make sure everything's going well. Everyone I worked with was extremely understanding about that fact. I mean, you stay a little later, or you just adjust your day to be able to make it work. And my husband, the same. I mean, he missed appointments here and there because he couldn't always do that. But my experience, luckily, was that I had lots of flexibility in my day so that I could move things around wherever I needed to, but, you know, keep a schedule to make sure that I was able to visit the doctor whenever I needed to. So I personally just made it my number one and everything else came second.
Did you guys have to communicate with your coworkers and boss about this? And if so, how did that conversation go?
Let's see. The first time it was hard not to know, because when you're going through retrieval, it is intense. I mean, I looked at one point like I was 6 months pregnant because your ovaries are enormous. And I mean, so much is happening inside of your body that you actually sort of appear pregnant. I don't know if anyone else had that experience or if it was just me, but I mean, and it was the summertime. So, I mean, I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve as it is. I'm pretty much an open book. So I shared with my coworkers what I was going through, and I had really good bosses and upper management and that kind of thing. So they knew what I was going through and were pretty okay with it. I never had to miss a ton of work or, you know, use too much PTO or anything. So it wasn't as big of a deal. And I'm sure there were times, for the most part, my job would, you're out in the field most of the day making sales calls and appointments. So I don't even know if they always knew when I had appointments and things like that. So I was very fortunate because of the type of job I had to be able to do that. But they were all supportive. Now, the second time, when I was under a whole bunch of stress, the second time we attempted IVF, such a negative experience. I remember telling my boss, because I had been really emotional at work, because work was super duper stressful, and because I'm going through IVF, knowing that it all rides on one egg. I mean, there's all these things mounting, and you know, I'm getting older, and your chances are getting slimmer, and it becomes a very pressureful situation once you've kind of been down that road. So I remember going to her office and saying, "Hey, I just want to talk to you real quick and tell you what's going on. Just so that you know," because I think I had kind of cried a couple times, which isn't really standard for me. I don't cry a whole lot at work. But I remember thinking, she probably thinks like something strange is going on. So I thought, I'm just going to tell her. And it was a really busy season of what we were doing. And it was just a really crazy, crazy time. And I thought, I better just tell her so that she knows what's going on. And just to kind of keep her in the know so that you're not like, is she falling apart or what's happening? Because I kind of was. I mean, I was really emotional and angry. And it was just it was much different than the first time. And I remember I sat down and I said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, I know I've been kind of all over the place. And I want you to know that we are going through IVF right now, trying to have a second child. And I kind of just explained what was going on. And her reaction was very strange. She said, well, you know, kind of said a couple of things and then said, well, you know, that's the choice you've made. We've got to keep working. It was like a brick wall. I thought, what kind of a weird response is that? I thought, you're a woman. Wouldn't you say, oh, honey, how exciting, or, you know, congratulations. It was just, it was really kind of a cold sort of, you need to get your stuff together and get going here because the rest of us are pulling more. You know, it was an odd, I remember it just crushed me. I just thought, not only do I feel a mess and I feel like a failure, now it's sort of reflected back to me from my manager, thinking I would get at least a little, maybe just some sympathy or some understanding. I got like, you need to get it together. And so I was like, oh, okay. So that just made it worse. And then the fact that it was unsuccessful kind of broke my heart. And I ended up quitting that job because it was too much. It was too much to not be supported, knowing you're working as hard as you can and you have this thing going on in your personal life that there's nothing you can do about, and you have to give it some consideration. I have to try to remain calm and have a good outlook. And it was kind of devastating the way she responded. So I ended up leaving. So.
And how were you able to afford fertility treatments?
That's a great question. We kind of look back now, and because the first round is the expensive round, that's when the retrieval and all that, you're paying all kinds of people. You're paying the IVF doctors, you're paying, you know, every time you go to the hospital. I mean, it's, and absolutely nothing was covered ever. So we look back and kind of don't know how we paid for it. I mean, that year between when I had my fallopian tubes removed and we knew we were going to do IVF, we were trying to save money for it at that point. So we had about a year's worth of time to sort of prepare ourselves financially for it. But I actually think my husband, who had been a teacher prior to being in sales, had a good sized retirement account that we cashed it in because we didn't, there was no way. I mean, it was just, it's such a huge lump sum. And then some of it comes over time. You only pay really the IVF doctors right up front. And so for that amount, for that large sum, we ended up cashing in one of his retirement accounts. And everyone tells you not to do that, but you know, you do what you have to do. You don't have a choice. And then the rest of it, you can pay over time. And that's what we ended up doing. And then the second and third times, it's significantly less. So we were able to sort of cash pay them. But again, you know, not without holding back a lot of money from other things. I mean, we had to, it was rough for a few times. And I think actually we may have borrowed a little bit of money from a family member because obviously your time is of the essence. You do not have time to figure out how you're going to do it. You got to go when it's time because especially for me, because of my age. So we did have to cash in a retirement account. And I think we borrowed a little bit from family, but we did everything we could to figure it out. My husband, I mentioned, was an artist, is still an artist. So he has some money that he makes on the side. So we did as much of that as we possibly could. And we went without taking vacations or doing anything really. You just basically grocery store, and I didn't buy clothes. I'd rather have a baby than clothes. So I didn't do anything that we would normally do. And we were all in on that. So it was fine.
How did infertility impact your relationship with your husband?
It's like a funny double-edged sword because it makes you see a good or a bad side from your partner about as far as like from my perspective, because I'm the one who feels like the failure. I'm the one who is going through all of it medically, and my physical body is going through it. And so from my perspective, I saw an extremely sympathetic, never has ever held anything against me or made me feel bad about it or even anything in that ballpark. So you have that. I mean, that I had that. But then you also have so much stress that you fight about dumb stuff because you're both sad and you're both stressed and you're both disappointed and you don't have anywhere to put that. So you end up over time kind of wounding each other here and there because you're mad. So it's like a double-edged sword. I have learned quickly. We learned very quickly. I mean, we got pregnant the first time, a couple months into our marriage, And he came right to my aid and was so supportive and, I mean, just blew me away. I got lucky in that regard that I have such a supportive husband. He will support me no matter what. He would have done anything I wanted to do, no matter the cost, nothing. And, you know, but then also you have 4 or 5 years of financial stress, super stress. Borrowing money from family is nothing to mess around with, you know, and taking out retirement and going a little bit broke for something to then be unsuccessful is pretty hard on you as a couple. You know, financially, that's really our biggest problem is finances. It's always, we've always had these expenses and things that have a lot of emotional sadness tied to them. That is something we have between us that we have to work through. That financial piece and that sort of unsuccessful time in our lives where we were really sad about it and sad at different times. So, you know, I'll be sad and then he'll be supportive and then he'll be sad and I'll be supportive. And, you know, and you go ebb and flow. And then all the times where I was on hormones through the roof, my poor husband and child, when I went through IVF this third time, I mean, the hormones were unbelievable. I felt almost like a crazy person because I was so up and down. I would be completely normal. And then 10 seconds later, I would yell and out of nowhere, no one would see it coming. So it's a joy. It's just a joy to be the person who your body is just basically up for medical science. I remember saying, if I never have another person, then that's fine with me. I mean, I've had so many people investigate my body over the course of 5, 6 years that I'm like good for the rest of my life. I'm good if nobody else needs to. The physical part and the emotional part it's a big, big, big strain on the marriage.
What about relationships with friends and family? Did infertility impact any of those?
I was the first one of my friends. Well, no, not the first, probably the third one of a group of maybe like 10 friends that I got pregnant. So I was so excited and then it was unsuccessful. And then I got pregnant again, unsuccessful. Almost every time there is a friend that had a baby that got pregnant at almost the same time I did. So there's a baby in our friend group for every lost pregnancy for me. And it's so hard because you think I'm so happy for that person. I am. You're so happy. But then you're also so devastated because you look at the five-year-old running around and think I had a baby that would be that age. I had a baby that would be that age. I would have had a baby that would have been best friends with this friend's child. And I have friends now who have, I know when they're delivering, you know, I know when they should have had a delivery when they lost a baby. I mean, most recently I've had someone who a couple of times and I know when the due dates were. And so I know when she's going to be her saddest because I know she knows when she should have had a baby and didn't. And so I'm very aware of that for myself and for other people. And so that, and people don't really understand when you have an ectopic and you're only 6 weeks along, you're only 8 weeks along, 9 weeks along, you think, well, you know, you really didn't get attached to it and you get used to it. You don't get used to it and you don't get unattached. You get very attached to a pregnancy, whether it's however long it is. And you picture that next September or that next December, whenever that baby was supposed to be due, you do just as much planning in your brain as any other mother. And then you have it dashed, those hopes dashed. And so it's interesting. You have a lot of support, but sometimes the only people who can truly understand are those who've gone through it.
Was self-advocacy important on your journey? And if so, how?
I had a really supportive partner. So he was always advocating with me. I never felt like it was self. I felt like it was us advocating for us. Like I said, I absolutely loved my first IVF doctor and felt very safe and very well taken care of in her hands. And then my personal doctor, the guy that's literally been with me for all 7 pregnancies, he pretty much gave me a cell phone to call him at home. He is like one of my favorite people in the earth. So for those two reasons, I felt really well taken care of. There, my second experience with IVF was with a new doctor. And I remember I did not feel connected. She was extremely good at her job, which is great, but there was no personal touch at all. And to go from someone who made me feel like I was a sister to her, to have someone then kind of be very, very not fluffy at all, no personal touch, just the facts at every meeting. So it kind of makes you, because you're already emotional at those appointments. And I felt like I needed to be more, I had to advocate more strongly in that situation because I did not feel like I had someone helping me along. I felt like I had someone who was doing a job, which was fine. But like when in that instance, we had to choose between two eggs and one egg. And I remember deciding on one, but I didn't feel real good about my decision because I didn't necessarily feel like I didn't really get consulted with about it like I did the first time. I felt like it was like, which one are you going to do? And I remember thinking, well, aren't you the expert? Maybe can you, and they can't really advise you. And it was just, I remember it was much colder, kind of stranger experience. It got better the third time because I think someone maybe mentioned that I felt that way. And so I think she warmed up a little bit to try and make me feel better. But self-advocacy is hard because you're navigating an entire world of things you know nothing about. So you're taking the advice of people who do this every day and hoping and praying that they are good at their job, because that's really all you can do. You can read everything you can, but mostly it'll scare you. We luckily had our brother-in-law that was right there who would not only give you some options, he would back up each option with lots and lots and lots of information and articles. And if he was going to give you any kind of an opinion, it was going to be, here are your options and here's why those are your options. So I felt with him in the ballgame, it was completely different than probably what most people go through.
How has infertility changed you?
For most of my life, or a lot of my life, I was successful at things just naturally. You know, I was very athletically inclined. And so I was always good at everything. I'm very social and outgoing. So I think people like me quickly. And so I've just always kind of had things go relatively easily, you know, as far as, you know, life is not always easy. But so then to hit that, and then to think, I'm married, I found the man I love, I'm just going to, you know, jump right into parenting. My sister has four children. She knows, you know, obviously we can do this. My mother has three children. Obviously we can do this. And so then to be kind of, in a way, smacked in the face over and over and over and over and over again, saying, no, you can't do this. It certainly humbled me. It gave me a lot of compassion for people who, for no good reason, kind of have these terrible situations. And there's a whole community of people in the infertility world now. I mean, there's a lot more people than there ever were before. And it was not talked about, whereas now it's more at the forefront. So I feel a part of that community, and it's an amazing club to be a part of. But definitely it makes you, because it's one of those things you can't control. No amount of being good at stuff or being, you know, because we were very good at getting pregnant, but we could not have a baby. And so it was very humbling, but it's good for you. I mean, I look back now and I think my husband and I had to really go through it, and we're still reaping the effects of it. We still have scars and cuts and wounds from it, but we are better for it. We are stronger for it. And our marriage will come out at the other end. You know, some days we wonder, but we definitely had something we had, and just he and I know. It's just him and I, he and I, that understand what we went through. Everyone else sort of knows, but he and I are the only two that know. And so our kids mean, well, I don't know what it would mean to have children easily, but they mean something to us that's deeper than we could have imagined because of how hard we had to work to get them.
Knowing what you know now, what is one piece of advice that you give to your past self?
The biggest piece falls into that second kind of time where I was having IVF and I was unsuccessful. I would say I need to go with my gut and determine, because the first time I was gung-ho about IVF, I gave it top billing of everything else I did. The second time, I was letting my work run my life. I was doing everything by someone else's standards, by someone else's direction. And whenever I do that, it doesn't seem to be as successful. So I would say to my past self, you do what you think is best and you do what you need to do for your family. Because even in that job, I could have done my job without having to be swallowed up and without having to, you know, kind of bow down to someone else and their way of doing it. I could have stepped up and said, I'm going to do it this way because this is what my family needs from me. And I still could have worked hard, but I could have drawn some boundaries and some lines and said some things that would have established, this is what I'm doing and this is how it's going to go. And I could have put some boundaries in place, I think, and done things my way And it would have been, I would have felt better about my situation. I felt very kind of like I got smacked around and was taken advantage of. And I probably never would have started my own business if I hadn't had that experience. So I guess you can't really take that away. But I would definitely tell myself that you do what you need to do and you know best. You know how to be successful. So you do what you think is best.
To wrap up the episode, what words of hope would you offer to someone who's just beginning her infertility journey right now?
Every single journey is different. Every single journey, even people who get pregnant right away. I mean, I'm telling you, everybody has fears and everybody has obstacles and everybody has no idea what they're doing. So take comfort. I came away with 2 children and 7 pregnancies and surgery and removal of some of my reproductive organs. And there's no shortage of hope and there's no shortage of things to find. Look for that glimmer. Look for the reasons to be happy. Because I'm telling you, when I was focused on, we're going to do this and it's going to work out. There's a way. There's always a way. When I focused that way, we seemed to have success. When I let it beat me down, it wasn't successful. And for me to get back up every single time and for my husband, for us to get back up as a couple, regardless of how hard it was and how muddy and yucky the time seemed at the time, when you look back now, you just find the hope that you need to find. You go find some story of some person who overcame something and use that as the only thing you think about, because the world is going to tell you, the stats are going to tell you, the data is going to tell you it's a losing battle. It won't work. It's, you know, it's likely that you'll have problems, you know, all these different things, but that is not how it has to go. I would say do nothing but focus on the people who win, the people who have success, the people who come through despite the odds. That is what you focus on. 90% of the time you can have a pity party, but you go right back to that.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Beat Infertility. Join our free private support community at beatinfertility.co/app. If you find yourself needing additional support, visit our paid programs at beatinfertility.co/hopeyou. If you'd like your story to be considered for a future episode, please fill out the form at beatinfertility.co/contact. Until next time.